Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everybody. I am Lucia Matuonto, and welcome to the Relatable Voice podcast, a talk show where my guests and I talk about relatable everyday situations, books, and the environment we live in. Remember to subscribe and follow the podcast on social media so you can be notified when a new episode is available. Let's begin. Today, we are heading to Massachusetts to chat with Michael Clark. Michael is a self-employed salesman embarking on a journey to transition into full-time writing. He has authored multiple books, and his latest release is titled Hell on High. Oi, Michael, tudo bem? I mean, how are you today?
Tudo bom? Obrigado. I speak a little bit of Portuguese. My wife is Brazilian, like you. And although I'm rusty right now, I can speak a little bit like a baby.
We spoke a little bit before, and I have to tell you that your Portuguese is really great.
Obrigado.
Michael, with your wife being Brazilian and your latest novel taking place in Brazil, what aspects of the country resonate with you the most? As someone who was born there, I always find it fascinating to hear diverse perspectives. So please share what you enjoy the most about Brazil and its culture.
Well, you have to say the people. I mean, I'm looking at you, you're smiling. They're known for parties, which is kind of a stereotype in Brazil, but the people are so friendly and mundial, you know, worldwide. They love to travel. I've been on many trips, and you always find a Brazilian there. We Josie and I, my wife, we just went to Iceland in April, and we were on top of a waterfall, and there was a Brazilian woman holding on the Brazilian flag, taking pictures in front of the waterfall. So it's like, you know, you always find one, and they're loving life. You know, they're out there to have fun. And then aside from the people, and I mean, I have to mention the food. I miss the food. When I go to Brazil, I can't wait to eat the food again. I love my coxinhas. I love my pastéis. I love everything. My muqueca, my churrascaria. I need it all. And I gain a lot of weight when I go back.
I absolutely agree with you. People are super, super nice in Brazil.
Yeah.
Have this energy, good energy. And also, as you said, Brazilian cuisine is one of the best. And
yes.
I don't go to Brazil for more than 10 years, but I miss it so much. Maybe this year I can visit, to go back there to visit.
Well, you can go to Portugal, like Bacalhau, like, you know, if you're in Spain, but you must sneak over to Portugal once in a while. And
yes, Bacalhau, which is codfish, is one of my favorite.
Yeah.
You've been to Brazil many times. Do you have let's say, favorite place?
As a tourist, you know, like, I've been more than 20 times now. So as far as first impressions go, it's hard to beat Rio. I mean, the landscape alone is just unbelievable in Rio de Janeiro. There are just the cliffs and hills, and then a big Jesus on the mountain, and then there's Sugarloaf down below, and the city lights up at night, and you know, it's unique. I've never seen anything like it. You can't compare Rio to any other town or city. I mean, as far as the landscape, it looks like almost like another planet. So it's beautiful that way. We often go to a little beach town called Guadapari. It's in Espiritu Santo. And that has become kind of a second home to me, though. Like, there's a little beach there. I'm going to blank right now. But Petacanga. And it's just, it's got the bajacas, the food huts, you know, right there on the beach. You can have beer and cochinas, whatever you want. You're sitting on the beach. I wish we had that, more of that kind of thing here. Or any country, too. I mean, not a lot of places have like a full service kitchen on the beach, and then come out and serve you, you know, beer colder than they serve here in the United States. It's just, it's a match made in heaven. I know I'm breaking your heart, right?
It is. Yeah. I'm heartbroken now. And I have to tell you, being born and raised in Rio de Janeiro, it's pretty much mandatory for me to declare it as the most stunning city in Brazil. I might be a bit biased, but hey, who can resist those breathtaking coxinhas de galinha? Can you explain to our listeners what coxinha de galinha is, please?
It's hard to explain. Picture, they come in different sizes, but picture like a teardrop. It's a teardrop shape. Coxa means thigh, like a chicken thigh, but it's not a chicken thigh. It's just shaped like one. And what it is kind of like a batter. It's not even, that's not doing it justice, but is it? Yeah. Okay. So it's like dipped in a wash, but it's like shredded chicken. And sometimes the catupiry cheese, which is, we don't have that here either. It's the closest thing you'd say is cream cheese, but that doesn't do it justice. So you picture like a chicken, shredded chicken that's seasoned with this delicious creamy cheese, and then it's wrapped in a kind of a dough or a batter, and then fried. And they can be as big as a golf ball, or they can be as big as a baseball. And if you can find a place that serves coxinhas, it's just grab one. It's so good. It's my favorite. And they put a lot of weight on me.
I find it in some cities in the U.S., for example, in Miami and Orlando. When you have many Brazilians there, you can find supermarkets that sell Brazilian food.
I found a food truck in Hawaii one time that was just a food truck, and they had. The most delicious fresh coxinhas, and they had hearts of palm, the palmito inside, which I've never seen before. But yeah, you're right. If you look hard enough, you could probably find it, especially if you live in a city.
Yes. Just to finalize, what I feel is it's like Mother Nature went on a vacation and decided to create her masterpiece, right, in Rio de Janeiro.
Yes. And I've been to Sao Paulo, and it, which is, you know, unbelievable in its own way. Like, if you want to go to, you could find any kind of restaurant in the world there. There's, I don't know how, it's over 10 million people. It's bigger than New York City.
It's bigger.
But it doesn't have that landscape that Rio does. You know, people jump off cliffs on those Asa Delta, the hang gliders. And it's crazy how beautiful Rio is. So I would start in Rio if I were a tourist.
I'm about to buy my tickets after talking with you.
Yeah. I'm starting to mark my calendar for August when we go visit her family again. Because I'm getting hungry.
And Michael, how did you decide to venture into writing horror novels at the age of 52, and what motivated you to explore this genre?
Well, I grew up reading Stephen King. Like, I used to get, he'd come out with approximately one book a year, and I got that book every year for Christmas. And then I even got to meet him one time when I was 17 at a book signing nearby. So I was, you know, he's a great writer. His stories are You know, just they're not stuck in one little subgenre either. It could be Firestarter, it could be about a haunted car, it could be, you know, The Shining in a haunted hotel. He kind of covered all the bases. So he was my number one and probably only influence. And I love scary movies too. Like, the way I look at it is, if it's like, my wife doesn't like scary movies, so I have to watch them by myself. Yeah. Well, the way I heard a saying, fear minus death equals fun. So if you can watch something and you feel that emotion and you know you're not going to die, then it should be fun, kind of a thing. It's like, and it's hard to get, it's hard to do, it's hard to be scared. I don't know, as a, you know, you grow up, maybe as a little kid, you those things scare you. Although I like you said, you're afraid, my wife is afraid still. I look at it as like, oh, that looks fake or whatever. So I'm watching all these movies and I'm like becoming jaded, right? I found myself becoming jaded and complaining. And I didn't like to hear that from my own mouth, that, oh, I didn't like that movie. Oh, I didn't like that movie. And even one day, my nephew, Brazilian nephew, he said, why don't you like anything? And I was like, oh, I'm that guy. I'm the grumpy old man now, you know? And I decided, like, well, I better put my money where my mouth is. And, you know, it's, rather than complain, write what you want to hear, see, whatever, you know, maybe it'll become a movie someday. So I sat down and I thought of the scariest thing I could, and found out it was kind of fun to do, to organize a million thoughts and put them all together into something that is cohesive. It's not easy, but it was fun. You know, it was like when you're done, you have something to put on the bookshelf that you did. And it's kind of like just an accomplishment. Mm-hmm. So my first book was called The Patience of a Dead Man, and I turned it into a trilogy, and I'll hold it up for you. I know this is a podcast, but it's a big, thick book because it's three books. It weighs 3 pounds. It's only like 800 pages. Mm-hmm. And
so three books in one.
Yeah. I mean, you can buy them separately too, but it's also available in this complete version. And then I sat down after that to that took, I don't know, 3-4 years, and to write a standalone book, because there are things about writing a trilogy that are not, you know, like not so many people finish a trilogy, you know, like way more book one are sold than book three. So, and Stephen King never really came out with too many like series. I know he had The Dark Tower you know, couple, maybe The Green Mile was like a put out in little chapter books when it first came out. But he wrote mostly standalone stories, and they're all different. And for Hell on High, this one is about, you know, it's a total change of scenery. This one is from, you know, Patience of a Dead Man. It's from New England. And this one, I decided, I was talking to my cousin-in-law, who's Brazilian, and she was talking about Macumba and how the northeast of Brazil they had some crazy things going on there. And I looked up a couple of them, you know. I don't know if, you know, the people in the northern Brazil are more, you know, they compared to the city folk make fun of them just like in anywhere. And they're like, yeah, they're crazy out there in the country. So I looked up a few of the things, and Macumba, to be fair to people that practice Macumba, is not pure black magic. You know, I don't want to offend anybody. And I even wrote a little foreword in my book about, you know, why did I pick Brazil? I'm not Brazilian. I'm a white man from United States. But I do know a lot about Brazil, and I've seen Macumba in practice in Brazil. Like, you probably have too. You ever like drive by a crossroads and you see like a little despacho left? Yes. There,
when I was a kid, I used to see it, but we've never had direct contact. And but can you explain to our listeners a little bit about Macumba? What does it mean?
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Me,
yeah, well, I don't, it's kind of like an umbrella term for three or four religions, and one of them is even like, I know I have a friend, it's Josie, my wife's friend, who lives here in the United States. She practices Umbanda, which is one of the three, and it's considered white magic, according to her. It's like, you know, you do these little rituals for positive things, but there are also darker factions of Macumba like Candomblé and Kimbanda. And, you know, I'm a horror writer, so I could have written about voodoo. You know, voodoo is here in the United States, and it may have like Afro origins, but I don't know much about New Orleans or voodoo. And I've seen Macumba in Brazil. I've seen a New Year's Eve when people go to the beach. You know, it's hot on New Year's down there. I know that's hard to picture for people from the United States, but New Year's is not a ball dropping in New York City. It's everybody goes to the beach, and it's summertime, and they wait till midnight and fireworks go off. But another thing they do is you'll see people that practice Macumba throw white flowers into the ocean to Yimanjá, the goddess of the sea. And that's Macumba too.
And we all dress in white.
Exactly. I had to do that too. Josie made me dress in white. I'm like, why am I dressing in white? But it makes sense. And it's cool. Everybody's dressed in white. And so anyway, I'm getting off track, but we were talking about Macumba and, you know, that it for all intents and purposes, in my book, it's black magic.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to know about Hell on High.
Well, the story takes place in 1970 Brazil. And Dr. Zé is, you know, he's a unsavory character. He's the bad guy. And he has a new wife named Aparecida, and she's his partner in crime. And the two children in the house are Juliana and Vilma, as I mentioned. But their mother went missing. And you can imagine what happened there. So then we also learn that Dr. Zé is his name. He has a sixth sense, he'll have visions, and he'll see the future. He doesn't know what it means all the time, but he's also afraid that Juliana, who is 19, is going to acquire this power because she's his daughter. She's coming of age, and obviously he has a lot to hide. The family also practices Macumba, and Juliana, she practices the good stuff, doesn't know that her father practices the bad stuff. And one night she has her friend Fernanda over to do homework and stay overnight, have dinner. And Fernanda, who has to use the restroom, walks down the hallway and walks into the wrong room and sees a Aparecida doing laundry. And when she does, she sees Macumba beads, the bad ones, the red and black ones, the porcelain ones that can only mean bad. And she's afraid, and Aparecida, you know, isn't happy that she barged in, doesn't say anything. You know, they both pretend that she didn't see the beads. And then the next day, after all is said and done, Fernanda goes missing. And Juliana doesn't know what happened, but she quickly finds out, you know, she finds a couple of clues and realizes she's got to leave as soon as possible, get out of the country even. And she embarks on a journey to the United States. Her grandmother tells her to get out, go somewhere where you're not going to be in trouble. Your father is, you know, probably, you know, he's got a lot of power. So she goes, but she has to leave her sister Vilma behind. And she realizes that she starts working to get Vilma back. And along the way, she She realizes, because, you know, she had to cross 11 borders from Brazil to United States. And that's, I mean, that, a lot of people do that in real life. So a good chunk of this book is about immigration and real life things that happen every day. It's happening right now. There's a jungle on the border of Colombia and Panama that just kills people left and right. And there's even a, it's called the Darien Gap. And there's even a, like a guerrilla army that lives in the jungle, you know, trafficking guns and drugs. And not only are there, you know, bugs and jaguars and floods and, you know, all kinds of things trying to kill you, there's also a guerrilla army that you've got to get past. And this is real life. But I, anyway, I'll, a little bit of a spoiler, but she makes it to America. Along the way, she realized that she's really good at hiking. And she meets a guy named Patrick, who is a climber. She's climbing on her weekends, you know, after she cleans houses all day, trying to save for her sister's rescue. And he has connections. This guy, Patrick, has connections. And I'll end in a second here, just so this is, you don't hear the whole story, but the connections that Patrick has is like a big corporate guy. And he wants to see his corporate logo flown on the top of Mount Everest. And Juliana, he sees her talent. He sees that she could be the one to do that. And if she does, it would be a nice big payday. She could save her sister sooner. But Mount Everest is no joke. And I go into great detail about how dangerous it is to climb Mount Everest. And if she dies, her sister will probably, you know, die as well. Mm-hmm. And I should also mention that this is how I got the title, Hell on High.
Yeah,
because it's hell up there. And this is what sparked me to write this book, was the dead bodies that are left on Mount Everest. Like, there are 300 dead bodies up there, because it's so difficult to get them down off the mountain that I heard a recent documentary. Like, I watched one on, I think it might have been Disney or Hulu, I can't remember. I think it's called Finding Michael. And it costs $40,000 to $80,000 to bring a dead body down off of the mountain. I mean, people are exhausted when they're up there. They have no energy. They can't get themselves down, never mind dragging a, you know, 150, 200-pound person or body, you know. So if you're in trouble on Everest, you're probably going to die up there, and you're probably going to stay up there. Mm-hmm. And there were, over the years, there were several bodies that became landmarks as other climbers year after year would attempt to summit. Like, there was a guy named Green Boots, and he laid there for 10 years. Like, the body went missing recently, I think. They don't know if the Chinese government, you know, they just throw him down a crevice or something, or throw him off the side of the mountain. But you got to chip them off the mountain too. They become part of the mountain, frozen to the mountain. That scared me. So that's why I wrote the book. And then I call it adventure horror, because this book is a heck of an adventure. It starts in Brazil, it goes to the United States, and then it ends on, you know, it also goes to the top of Mount Everest.
And how did you research for this book?
I've always been fascinated with Mount Everest. I, on my bookshelf over there, I have like one of those big coffee table books about Everest. Into Thin Air, the book Into Thin Air, and the movie Into Thin Air, which is a true life account of 1996. There was like a storm that came in and killed a bunch of people on the mountain. And one of the guys he died on the phone to his wife, who was home pregnant. You know, they were talking on the phone while he died. It just, that kind of thing really, you know, chills me to the bone is a cliche and a bad pun, but it really does. And then another thing too is, like, in 1999 they found the remains of George Mallory, who went missing on the mountain in 1924. They found his body, and it was remarkably well, you know, preserved. They could read the tag on his shirt that said G. Mallory or whatever. But they thought that he might have been the first person to summit Mount Everest. And but they'll never know unless they find his partner's camera. And his partner hasn't been found since 1924. So it's just that kind of thing. It's just, it's eerie to me. And I had to write something about it.
Yes, congratulations. Actually, I'm curious.
Thank you.
Is Juliana inspired by a real person?
Yes. You know, Josie, my wife, for sure. She's, you know, she's adventurous and she's smart and you know, she's all you and maybe a little vengeful at times, you know, all the things you want in a heroine for your story.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
I knew, I had this feeling that was an inspiration behind Juliana. As an author, what advice would you give to aspiring writers?
Well, I've learned that not everybody approaches it the same way. You don't have to do it the way I do it. And there's two kinds of writers. One is they call it a pantser, which means like you fly by the seat of your pants and you just sit down and you start writing. I don't know how people do that. I mean, I'm afraid I'm going to get on a tangent and then, you know, paint myself into a corner. I'll reach a dead end and I don't know how to finish the book. So what I do is I make like a spreadsheet that I can sort, like a database almost. And I'll give them a plug. It's airtable.com. It's like this sortable database thing that I can get in there, change, delete, you know, reorder things. And I'll spend a couple months, however long it takes, trying to get my beginning, middle, and an end. And then when that is, it's never complete. It's never 100% complete, but it reaches a point where I can't organize and sort anymore and I have to start writing. And then you find all the mistakes in your outline too, you know, but at least you have an idea, and that's what I do. So there's pantsers planners, I guess. One is an architect and one is a gardener. Somebody just, you know, the pantser is the one that plants a seed and lets it grow. And then the planner is the architect that needs to see the blueprints before they start writing. So choose your path and go with it.
Yeah, thank you for your tip. Usually I need the characters. Sometimes I don't have this story. Usually I paint the characters, I draw them, or sometimes I paint, and then I can develop this story. I need to have the characters first. But of course, as you said, we need to choose what is easier for us.
That's a really good point that you brought that up, because that's what I need to work on mostly. Like I do know my characters, but I definitely am more like, I didn't even know, like, you know, I started late. I started at 52. I'm 57 now. I didn't know what character driven meant and then plot driven. You know, I'm character driven, you know, like, and then I realized that I've seen 100 movies where, you know, it doesn't really have a clear ending, you know, or maybe like the Mad Men TV show. It was just like a series of vignettes, you know, like little scenes, and there's no real like, well, where's this going? You know, but you really do have to have characters that are three dimensional. And I try to choose, like you said, with, you know, who is Juliana? Well, okay, it's Josie. It helps to have a 3D model of your character so that you can know who they are and what they would do, you know. So I totally agree. You and I approach from different angles, and I feel like I need to work on what you're good at already, you know what I mean, more than the plot thing, you know. So yeah, see, we're all different.
Yes, we can always learn with each other. This is the beauty.
Yes, absolutely.
And Michael, where can our audience find your books, find you, and of course stay updated on your feature releases and events?
I would say probably my website, which is michaelclarkbooks.com. Clark is spelled C-L-A-R-K. So michaelclarkbooks.com. I'm on Amazon. With Hell on High, I'm in more places because I went through a publisher. I self-published The Patience of a Dead Man, so it's only on Amazon. But Hell on High is in more places. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get books into bookstores too, you know, like if you're not signed by one of the four or five, you know, whatever the number is, the big publishers nowadays, it's hard to get into a Barnes and Noble. So you're not going to probably find me in too many of those. I know I'm in a couple, but I'm trying to work with some independent bookstores, and you know, they're struggling too. You know, it's hard with Amazon, the way they run their business, and kind of like swallowed up a lot of the little guys, and it made publishing easier because you can do everything through Amazon, but it also made it harder in many ways.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for making me feel saudade. That means that I'm missing someplace. Saudade is a unique word that we have only in Portuguese. That means that I am missing something, but not like I miss you. It's a different context.
Yeah, it's. I think it has a few meanings, right? Like it could mean like if you say saudades, saudades pra você, I miss you, right? Like I don't, but or just saudades for your country or for the food, or you miss it. It's we need three or four words to say that, and Portuguese has it in one, and it's a great word. I also like cafuné.
Cafuné
means to play with your hair, basically.
And for our listeners, don't miss the chance to catch Michael's feature in the June issue of the Relatable Voice magazine. So please visit www.relatable-media.com for your free copy and check out Michael's website, and he has many other good things for you to see there. So, Michael, thank you very much.
Obrigado.
Muito obrigado.
Yes, thanks so much, Lucia. I enjoyed my time.
You are always welcome.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you'll be notified when the next one is posted. Please rate this podcast and share it with your friends. Thank you for listening, and remember, relationships don't exist. Relating does. Until next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.